Hi, and welcome to Adventure Dog Podcast, the podcast all about doing amazing things with your doggos. I'm Nathan Berry, she's Rue the Shark, and this is episode 32. Impact. I'm rather relieved, and we get the scoop on stress in a short talk with veterinarian Dr. Zinkus. For this week's episode, I did something just a little bit different due to an extremely busy schedule and some circumstances. Instead of having a full show today, I have a chat with my vet, Dr. Z, about a subject that had me, well, a little nervous. Stress. It's probably a topic that could take hours to cover all of the details, but today we simply chatted about a few points specifically related to adventuring. Oh,
okay. You know,
first I was going to say, how's Yogi doing?
He's doing great. He's sitting here right next to me. He just tried to get into something and it almost hit him, but he ran right off. No, he's doing awesome. He's doing awesome. He's a good boy. He's just growing. And actually, I neutered him last week. That's
what I was going to ask about. I saw that you did that yourself.
Yes. It's one of those things as a veterinarian that you either do it or you don't want to get near it. And my staff is so great that they had him perfectly anesthetized. I didn't have to do any of the anesthetizing him or putting in a catheter and all that stuff. Okay. All I had to do was go into surgery and pretend like this was just a routine patient. And did my business and then got out. But it's one of those things where most of the vets here operate on their own dogs. So if we have a problem, we ask the other one. But you can't think of it like family.
Yeah. That's like those, you know, when I was in school and they used to do those puzzle stories that you have to figure out. And there's the one that comes up where they bring a patient into the room and the doctor's like, I can't operate on this person. And you have to discover why and you find out it's his son.
right. Exactly. But the thing about it is we all of us doctors here treat our patients like they're our own. So it's kind of like you're always working on your own. You can't escape.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, if you want to get started with this, the reason that I am kind of on the phone with you, and thank you for coming on the phone. I had some really good feedback from the last time that you were on, so I thought I would do a little bit more.
Yeah.
So today I want to talk about stress. Stress in your dog, anxiety, and, you know, what causes it, some of the signs, and how we can deal with it. So I guess, first of all, it kind of came up as I talked to so many people and their dogs, a lot of them are rescues and already have anxieties or certain situations put them under more stress. So kind of what I wanted to think about in this, does adventuring, and I know that we all like to adventure and get out, and under normal circumstances, it's great for our dogs. They get to go out and be active. But are there times that being out and active in adventurous, maybe unique situations that would put your dog under stress? So the first question I have is, do active and normally healthy dogs get stress?
Okay, so stress is what we have to first remember is stress for us is different for stress for a dog.
Okay.
So for me, knowing I have a stressful day coming up, knowing I've got a marathon coming up. Somebody who has to take, they get stressed out. Dogs don't think like that. They don't reason like that.
Okay.
Dogs, in general, and again, speaking of rescues, that is a perfect example. Those are probably the primary dogs we see with stress problems because, first of all, you don't know their history.
Sure.
We do not know their history. And some of these histories, we don't want to know because some of them can be very horrific. Dogs being abused, dogs being left at home all day. So the that's kind of different. Just going back to real quick, my puppy, I made sure I introduced him to all different types of people, noises, you know, people in hats, people of all different races, people of males and females, okay. Big dogs, little dogs, cats. So he's used to all that, those environmental cues. There are dogs, unfortunately, and this is the same with service dogs. They introduce them to everything. So they're used to it. But dogs who are rescued don't have that luxury. We don't know their history, and so there's dogs thunderstorm fright, fireworks fright, all of those are very big for dogs, and they just know, they don't know that's a thunderstorm. We can't explain to him that is a thunderstorm. They just are scared of the noise. And sometimes, you know, you have dogs that have car fright, because they're riding in a car and the owner doesn't have in a seatbelt or carrier, and they stop real fast and the dog hits the seat. And from then on out, they're going to be scared of the car. And so you have to make that a positive environment again. And how do we do that? Okay, we alleviate stress. You know, a lot of times people say to me, give me a pill to help. Give me a pill. And that's, you know, I've got a father who's a child psychologist, and that's like saying to him, okay, my kid has ADD, give me a pill. Well, it's fine to give a pill. I'm not saying it isn't. But you have to do behavior modification too.
Sure. It's kind of nice to find, I guess, in a sense, the root of the problem and work on correcting the root. And when you brought up with rescue dogs that we don't necessarily, I don't necessarily want to know what a dog has been through, but it might be sometimes nice to know what they've been through in order to maybe correct that problem.
Right. And we can't, the problem is we can't. Yeah. You know, talk to them and find out their history. We have to go by cues. You know, for instance, if I have a dog that comes in and one of my male technicians comes in and they're all of a sudden scared of him, well, there we go. If, you know, I've even had dogs with white coat syndrome. So they've been at a vet before me that maybe they haven't had a good experience. I walk in with my white coat and the dog automatically, even though the dogs can't really see colors, but they can see the coat, they automatically shut down. And so I have to go outside, take off my coat, and come back in with a treat. and we have to be patient with them too. You know, you've got dogs that get stressed out and they urinate everywhere and we think, oh, they're just being bad. But honestly, we have to be patient with them and realize that this is not them. We have dogs that have separation anxiety and they will tear up the house, but it's not them. So it's important to work with, you know, if you have a dog that work with behaviorists, and there are other modalities we can use. Yes, we can use drugs sometimes. Sometimes we have to put them on Prozac. There are, unfortunately now, there's thunder shirts that basically it's very, and thunder blankets. And it basically works with the same idea behind kids with autism. It's deep pressure that helps alleviate that stress. We have Adaptil collars that release pheromones that can help with dogs to kind of calm them down. Yeah. A lot of times we use the drug trazodone, which is actually a human sleep drug that works phenomenal with dogs.
Okay.
So there are many modalities. I mean, you want to obviously ask your veterinarian. Sure. Sometimes we have to go to behaviorists. There are veterinary behaviorists.
And I guess that's kind of one of the things that it's a good idea to maybe understand if or when your dog is stressed. So what would be some typical signs? And I guess in this specific situation, when you're either traveling with your dog, maybe putting your dog into, I wouldn't call it extreme situations, but let's say hiking, camping, doing outdoor adventure stuff. In most of these situations, when we take our dogs, these are positive situations, and most dogs do react really well to these.
Oh, yeah,
but
absolutely.
I mean, have you ever seen situations where getting out and doing stuff like this would have a negative reaction on a dog?
Yeah. I mean, for instance, say you're out camping and there's a thunderstorm and your dog is scared of them. I mean, or if they even hear an owl hoo, they could, you know, but the other thing we have to consider, we got to flip that over. And there's some dogs that thrive at being outside, and keeping them inside is, they go crazy. I mean, think about a border collie. I see tons of border collies who are in a city environment, and these dogs are bred to herd cattle. So they want to get out there and do that.
And that can be something as simple as just getting out in the backyard and being extremely active. Okay.
Yes. Throwing a ball, throwing a frisbee. But keeping them inside, they go nuts, because it's, and that's more of an inherent, you know, with my little dachshund here, in about 8 weeks, he started like trying to root around to dig holes, and that's instinctual in him. Yeah, it's crazy to see some of these behaviors come out.
Okay.
But they're breed related behaviors.
Are there any specific signs of stress that you see from being in a car or car traveling?
Yes, I see that more when dogs get nauseous when they travel. So there's some dogs that get very nauseous, and so going into that car, I mean, think about it. You wouldn't, you know, I like to compare things to humans. If going on fast roller coaster rides makes you nauseous, I'm not going on that. No way. And that's how the dog feels. They think, oh God, here comes. You know, my staff jokes that I drive like, you know, it's Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. So they're always scared to get in the car with me. But that's something that the dog sees. Oh my gosh, this place where I got nauseous last time, I don't want to go on there again.
Okay.
And so there are medications we can use to help. And that's where, you know, sedatives can come on board too.
Okay.
There might be a dog that was in a car accident with its owner. And it doesn't want to get in that car again. So it's memories like that. They don't know that is a car accident that happened. All they know is when I see that car, a negative response came to it. When I see that car, I vomit. So I don't want to go in there.
Okay. Is there a difference between a long-term or a short-term anxiety? Is there something that, I guess, kind of what you mentioned as being inherent as something that is learned? For instance, a thunderstorm would be more inherent, whereas being on a car ride would be more learned anxiety or stress? Or something, not learned, but maybe I'm using the wrong word there.
The thing we have to remember is anxiety can also get heightened. So perfect example is a thunderstorm. So you've got a dog that has thunderstorm fright, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's bad, you know, it's bad. Maybe the owner has to give it some Benadryl. Well, let's say one time this dog, they like to get behind things. Let's say it gets behind the toilet and there's a metal bar there and they get shocked during that particular thunderstorm. Well, that thunderstorm fright has just gone up, that the fear of it, because not only it's already scared of the thunderstorm, but it just got shocked at this current thunderstorm. And so they are going to be even more fearful the next time. So it's a heightened, it can become worse. Now that also can become better but that's going to take some time. So when you go, say the dog is scared of cars, well, you go in there and you give him a treat when he gets in there, and you don't even go anywhere. You just put him in the car, give him a treat, take him out. And so it's going to be to regain that confidence.
Okay. But that necessarily wouldn't change the physical feeling that the dog has of being on a car ride and changing that anxiety. It would simply just be kind of changing their perceived.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that kind of covers that. The first question I had of if they have stress. Well, maybe we could get a little more into the signs of stress. You mentioned like nausea. Are there other situations, you know, other than just outward signs of maybe shaking during a thunderstorm?
Yes, they can shake. They can, but you got to remember, shaking in a dog also can be that they're excited.
Okay.
So my dog shakes when he gets real excited about things. I think stress, you see, sometimes they'll destroy stuff. So some people take that stress as, oh, they're being bad, they're upset because I left.
Okay.
No, this dog is stressed out because it has separation anxiety because you left. You know, like I said, they destroy furniture, they do stuff like that. They might pace. They aren't going to be, you know, I hear people saying, oh my gosh, the holidays are coming, I'm so stressed. Yeah, dogs could care less. They could care less if the holidays are coming. What they might get upset about is, oh my gosh, there's a bunch of people in my house now. And when they aren't used to that, and the dog might start acting out as pacing, drooling, panting a lot when lots of people come over, because the dog has not been exposed to a lot of people.
Okay. Or Christmas tree.
Oh yeah. Oh, right there. Yeah. Big bright lights. I don't know what the heck my dog's going to do, but we're going to make it a positive experience for him.
Okay. And that kind of leads back into, you know, going for car rides and stuff. Are there any other physical signs of stress, things that might happen to your dog? I mean, it could even get into maybe diarrhea, constipation, anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. And we see this a lot in dogs in boarding facilities. When they haven't been in one, they can get what's called stress colitis. So diarrhea secondary to stress. And a lot of these dogs, it's linked to irritable bowel syndrome. There's irritable bowel and inflammatory bowel. Okay. Inflammatory bowel tends to be something that the dog has. It's not, you know, stress may make it worse, but irritable bowel is, oh my gosh, you get stressed out and you get diarrhea. And I have several dogs who we put them on probiotics to help with that.
And that those are pretty solvable in short term, pretty easily.
Sure,
I assume.
Sure.
Okay. Some of the more long-term solutions that you can think of that are good for stress. And one that I'll kind of bring up here is I recently had on a past episode, I recently had a woman whose dog is highly anxious, fearful in some situations around large bodies of water, moving water, where you're getting close to it. Are there solutions to things like that beyond, well, I guess the easiest solution in those situations is just exposure over time and being consistent with it.
Correct.
But can you think of, I mean, I guess that would be a better solution than a short term, like a prescription or something like that.
Right.
Always you want to kind of go with the natural solution, I assume.
Right. So I think it's very important getting involved with veterinary behaviors. Unfortunately, we don't have one in town. I mean, you can talk to your veterinarian. A lot of us dabble in behavior, but finding a board certified veterinary behaviorist, or there's even a couple of trainers in town I'd love who use positive reinforcement. And basically what I mean by positive is not flooding them, not taking them out to the water and throwing them in there and saying, good luck. but rather doing it very slowly, because you don't have a fear, and the dog learns to, it's just like training a dog, the dog learns to trust you rather than and this is especially true with rescue dogs, you want them to trust you and not fear you.
Okay.
So you know, using very, very positive reinforcement with, or you want to make that water a happy place.
Okay. Yeah,
and it's going to take some time, and you may never. There's some dogs, they have great memories, and you may never be able to convince that dog otherwise. Now, I had a dog years ago, a Labrador, when I was a kid, and we go up to Lake Michigan every year, and that dog knew when it got to Lake Michigan, man, it would, you know, that 12-hour trip, once it got to the lake, it would be able to run and chase that ball, loved it. So every year when we got up there, that dog would sleep the whole way there. When we pulled into where the lake was, it would start smelling, their sense of smell, his sense of smell was so good, and he knew he was there, and he got excited. So they have a lot of senses that we don't have, or excuse me, they have a lot more senses that are heightened, that give them that makes it more difficult for us to understand their stress or their love of something.
Okay.
Their sense of their brain, they can't quote Shakespeare like we can, or some of us can, some of us can't. but they can smell so much better than us. They can, their sense of just reasoning in that aspect, I think we're just cutting the iceberg on what we know about dogs. We like to think we do, but I think they're, in some instances, they're a lot smarter than us.
Yeah. Well, this brings up a good thing. You, the way you talk about a sense of smell and stress, is there such a thing as a good stress?
That's a good question. I would think that you'd see it more in working dogs, maybe.
Okay.
So say you have a dog that likes to hunt. That dog, it's like an excitement stress, I would say.
Yeah.
So the dog knows, oh my gosh, I want to go get that duck that was just shot. I want to go, and the handler will all of a sudden, okay, ready, wait. And that stress is building up, and then release. And then that dog goes. It's like being stressed before a marathon or a race. Oh man, you're stressed out. Yeah. I don't jump in the corral until 1 minute before, 30 seconds before the race starts, because I don't like all that around me stress. But that stress can actually fuel you.
Yeah.
Just like it can fuel a working dog.
Almost like it's a nervous energy, which helps kind of propel you forward sometimes.
Exactly.
And I wonder if being in certain situations can actually be stressful in a good way for a dog, because it teaches them certain things. And that specifically leads directly into being on adventures, rock scrambling up something that might be really tough. If overcoming that stress, having that stress just in general, can actually be a booster for the dog's confidence in the long run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a perfect example for this. Sorry for my examples, but I was teaching my little guy to use the steps.
I love examples.
And he was so scared to go up the steps, but we start a few at a time. And now I get to the top of those steps. He comes running up and I make the huge deal of it. He gets a treat. But at first he was terrified, but we did it slowly, and he knew there was a treat reward, and he did a good thing, and now his confidence going up those steps is no problem.
Okay, cool. That's exactly one of the good things I at least wanted to get into. So yeah, you did mention there are some solutions for long-term and short-term, and you know, I always, like you said, I always recommend using positive reinforcement to overcome stressful situations like that. Like you just mentioned, going up the stairs and doing the treat. In extreme situations, what are some of the few things that you recommend, I guess, as a vet, if you had to prescribe something or, it, you know, something that you prescribe, would it, or even maybe some natural solutions that you can think of?
Some people use CBD oil.
Okay.
That's become very big. Now, one thing I do want to say, and I'm probably going to make a lot of enemies, but some people might disagree, but I'm looking at this strictly from a behavior standpoint. I know there's some cases where this is needed, but I'm going to take an example, pinch collars.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to make this where this becomes a real negative and the pinch collar goes against us. So the pinch collar acts by inducing pain. Well, if you've got a dog, if you're sitting there walking your dog and another dog comes out and that dog starts going towards them barking and there's a fight about to break out, you pull on that pinch collar and that just incites that. Heightens the aggression. Veterinary behaviorists have found this out to be true. You're pulling on that pinch collar and it's just like somebody comes up and hits you. Oh, and that makes you even more mad. You want to go get them even more. So there's an instance where there's a modality that we think helps us. And in some situations it might, but actually in that particular situation, it can do more harm for the dog. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, but as modalities we can use, oh, absolutely. We mentioned thunder shirts and thunderstorms. There are certain drugs out there. Again, you need to talk with your veterinarian to find out if it works in your particular circumstance, such as Clomicalm for separation anxiety. There's Adapto collars, but it all depends on the root of the cause of the stress. Okay. And it can be very tricky to find that out, figure out what the heck is the cause here. I mean, something as simple as, okay, here's a good example. You might notice your dog, your male dog, is going around the house and he's salivating and he's running all around. Well, what you don't know is a mile down the street, he is smelling a female in heat. Again, it's usually in male intact dogs, but that's the stress. And you would know.
Because you there's can't certain see symptoms. It.
Right. Okay. Right. So getting your dog neutered. There you go. Number one. That can help guard against that. There can be, you know, a siren they hear way off, a tornado siren that you don't even hear. Dogs can even sense tornadoes coming, and they can start acting really weird that. I even have owners, when I have owners who they're expecting their first baby or a baby in general, that dog, when the mom's about to give birth, that dog starts acting different.
Oh, wow.
And it's very interesting because some of the more female dogs will hang towards the mom, even males will. But the females tend to be a little more intuitive, and they'll start hanging close to the mom. It's right before she's about to deliver. Yep.
Okay. And I guess they're pretty darn amazing. They're just sensing the physiological change in the human. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that leads me into, that's why dogs so much are being used to with diabetic patients, with figuring out cancer. I mean, it's amazing what they're doing now because dogs are so much more intuitive than us as far as senses are included. And those senses can make them more sensitive to stresses. And what we blow off as, oh, a thunderstorm's coming, okay, whatever, they're like, oh my God, the end of the world is coming. And some dogs that are sensitive. So we have to be sensitive to that and cognizant of that with our dogs.
Yeah.
Yogi could care less. He's sitting here and I'm sitting here talking and he's just snoozing away.
Yeah, Rue will pace occasionally. She's not a yep. huge fan of thunderstorms. She has learned to kind of deal with them just through, I guess, experience.
Right. That nothing bad's going to happen to her because you keep her safe during that.
Yeah.
She knows. Now, one time, you know, something bad happens, that's going to kind of set you back, which can be frustrating.
Sure.
You know, I hope nothing ever happens like she gets shocked or you know, a tree falls through your house. But if that happens, that's going to make things a lot more difficult.
I'll tell you one actual thing that recently happened. We just did that, the 25K, the Walking Tall 25 and 50K. And at the start of that, they actually have a starting pistol. And I think that that's the first time
God.
That Rue has ever heard a gun go off.
Yeah.
Didn't faze her one bit.
Oh, good.
She
good.
Was so excited to get going that I think, you know, when it went off, she immediately was like, we're going. And I think that it was, in a sense, that was a good positive connection.
Right. And that's one of the most important things when you've got a military dog, a police dog, a dog that's going to be used for hunting. They've got to be able to be able to tolerate gunshots.
Yeah.
And
associate that gunshot,
that.
I guess, with
right.
the next step, which is going after that bird, which is,
right.
in a sense, that's the positive reward for them.
Right. Right. Okay. And you got a dog that does not do that. They don't get to do that. They don't get to hunt. They're not a good hunting dog.
Yeah.
They become a lap dog.
Okay, so going back, we kind of briefly got into
Sorry.
It. No, that's okay. We got a little bit off. But some of the things that you might recommend, and you brought up CBD oil
mm-hmm.
and a couple other things. Is there any sequence that you would go in? Like, this is what you would recommend first, and if that doesn't work, then you should try this.
Yogi, you're fine. He says hi. So it all depends on what we're dealing with. So give me an example of a stress, like thunderstorm fright.
Thunderstorm fright's probably one of the most common.
Okay. So, or fireworks.
That, or traveling in the car, kind of what
okay.
I think a lot of people that listen to this are going to be dealing with on a
okay.
regular basis.
So thunderstorm, let's start with thunderstorm fright or fireworks fright. What I would try first before I just throw drugs at them, you know, you might want to try some Benadryl first. I
really?
Can say this because I'm a veterinarian. It's a milligram per pound. So
mm-hmm.
you want to use the plain Benadryl. And say I have a 25-pound dog, so they can have 25 milligrams a pill of Benadryl.
Okay.
You can actually double the dose at night, so 50 milligrams. I know that would knock me on my feet, but you know, you got a 100-pound dog, they can get 200 milligrams of Benadryl. Obviously check with your veterinarian, but that's something that can kind of sedate them. But I, you know,
okay.
I don't know if I necessarily, you know, you could start with that and maybe a thunder shirt. Start with something that's not going to affect their body over time.
Yeah.
When we get into drugs like, you know, Clomicalm, you know, we worry about liver enzymes going up, fluoxetine.
Sure.
You want to do the least amount possible. So I like to use behavior modification first. If you can use treats and positive reinforcement, beautiful. Now, if you've got something like they get nauseous or they don't like the car, and the reason they don't like to get in the car is because they get nauseous. So that might be a time where you talk to your vet and you say, hey, I want to get some Serenia and I want to use the motion sickness dose or Dramamine
okay.
or something. And that's where you want to get that dose from your vet and make sure that patient is good with that. And that would be an instance where we have to use something like that to knock out the secondary stress.
Okay.
So I like to start very slow and work my way up. Now, if we get very heightened, we may need, you know, several modalities, such as let's take thunderstorm fright. We might need a thunder shirt. We might need some Benadryl. We might need an Adaptil collar. We might need some music playing in the background to
yeah.
knock out the thunderstorm. You don't want them around windows where they can see the lightning. So you might have to use multiple things. You might get to a point where this dog is it will hurt himself if the thunderstorm continues on because he just starts clawing at himself and at the, you know, wall and stuff. And you might need something that completely sedates him, like Xanax,
okay.
again, or Trazodone. But again, that's something to talk to your veterinarian about.
And that's
about.
A pretty extreme situation,
right.
I would assume.
When we're there, then it's time. And I have some patients that are like that. And, you know, we do what we can.
Tell me a little bit more about that Adaptil collar that you're mentioning. This is something I have never heard of.
Yes, these collars came out by the company Siva, and I don't work for them or anything, but they're
okay.
collars that it's similar to when we use it's pheromones basically that help calm the dog, similar
okay.
to cats, and you use a feel away. which is just pheromones that help calm them, appeasing. So I guess with people, going home and taking a bath in lavender helps some people, you know, just kind of chill out. CBD oil is something that, you know, there's some places you can just go and buy it over the counter. You want to make sure you're using a reputable source because there's some gimmicks out there. There's also a drug used, and I actually talked to one of my friends who is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, and there's a drug out called Soliloquin. It's used in cats and dogs, and I know one little dog, the owner was so concerned because she was moving to a new house and the dog's going to stress out. She started Soliloquin, which is just a like tryptophan and things like that, that basically she started before she moved, and a little bit after, and that dog did great. It just kind of took the edge off in a natural way.
Sure. Speaking of natural, and I guess I would be remiss if I didn't bring up and mention, because I have talked about this in the past with other people, mm-hmm. and they find this extremely useful, is using herbal supplements. And there is Kairos for dogs. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
No.
They do some really cool stuff, herb mixes, but they also do single herbs. There's one that they have called Harmonious for Dogs.
Okay.
That includes things like chamomile, just kind of calming herbs. Is that something that you would suggest on a regular basis?
Absolutely. The only thing I will put my foot down on, because it's been shown to be toxic, are essential oils. I have had dogs and cats come in here, and they are just – essential oils have been poured on these dogs and cats, and they get sick from them. That is something that I will put my foot down about that, and I will advise not to use. But herbs, chamomile, what turmeric is great. It's anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory. Love it. I know Dr. Kathy Michener, who works a lot with cancer patients, uses a ton of that.
Yeah, that's some of the stuff that I've looked at and I think is a really great idea. So I thought I'd include that in there, especially for people that don't want to go the pharmaceutical route. And I completely,
absolutely,
I completely get that. So, well, cool. I think that that's pretty much all the stuff, unless there's something else that you can think of that I haven't asked or that you want to add in there.
I just start blabbing. I start blabbing and just, you know, there we go. But there's so many things out there. And I think the thing we have to remember is first do no harm. There's going to be no magic bullet.
Yeah.
It's going to be frustrating because it's difficult to understand them and them understand us. Everybody thinks they know their dog. And I firmly believe owners know their dogs the best. They know much better than me.
Okay.
So I try to listen to them. But there are some behaviors that veterinarians see over and over and over and over again.
Okay.
And those are the ones where we have a cat that maybe comes in that's excessively grooming its. Oh, wait. I got a better example.
Okay.
So there is a thing in dogs that is caused by stress or boredom, and that's called an acralic granuloma. And that's where they just keep some kind of insult or injury happens to the foot. Maybe they get a little cut or allergies, and they start licking a spot on their foot. And you get this hard lesion. Well, what actually happens in that case is every time that dog licks that area, it releases serotonin into their body. So they're actually getting a high every time. And it's a calming thing. But at the same time, it's causing a skin infection, a deep furunculosis or skin infection. And a lot of times we have to treat these, you know, I've had patients with Prozac and a knee collar until it resolves, and antibiotics until this resolves. Even topicals need to be used. But that's something that stems from stress or boredom, and it becomes just, you know, kind of like a contact high.
Okay. Wow, that's really interesting. That's something I had
it's
not thought of or heard of.
Acral, A-C-R-A-L, lick granuloma, or lick granuloma is another name.
Okay.
And we can tell these because they're usually on the front paws. They're usually very, very thickened areas of skin that have become a secondary infection due to the dog licking it so much.
Does age have anything to do with that? Is
Mm-mm.
it more
nope.
common? It can be common in any
nope.
age.
Any age.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I guess that's pretty much it. What's funny is, and I'll go ahead and bring it in. The reason I, you know, first kind of came up with this and had questions about stress is because you know, Rue had to come in, and this is the fun part. She had to have her anal glands expressed because they were impacted, and that was a big deal.
Anal glands are like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You can link anything to anal glands, believe me. And you can get them, believe me, I've had them in my hair. I've had the stuff in my mouth. They're a big nuisance to us. But yes.
Well, my original concern, because her anal glands were impacted and she came in and had this done, is because I was worried that she was stressed out from being on a long car ride or something like that. And that was the problem. But not necessarily. That is just something that occurs naturally and something that oftentimes just needs to get checked out, because she was in a bad mood leading up to that.
I'm sure she was.
And then once she had her glands expressed, oh my gosh, she was just 100 times better.
It's amazing. You know, people always say I'm the popular anal gland expresser because I have small fingers, and I guess they're magic fingers. I can make dogs feel phenomenal. I even made a cat feel phenomenal today by expressing their anal glands.
I don't know if that's the best way to introduce yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, you know.
Well, I have one more question for you, and I did not get to ask this the last time that you were on, but I'm going to ask now, and I think it's absolutely perfect. Pretend that Rue and I are going to come up to the clinic, and we're going to take on all of your work. We're going to take care of your patients for you.
Oh, wonderful.
And we are going to give you we would have a great time, like, hanging out with all of your patients, your cats and dogs. But we're going to give you the Adventure Dog Podcast golden ticket to pack up with Yogi and go anywhere and do anything. Where would that be?
It's actually happening in May. Yogi and I are, I'm getting back into marathoning, racing.
Okay.
Now, don't tell anybody about this. This is just between you and me again. I'm just kidding.
I think everyone's going to hear this one.
Yeah, it's fine. No, I'm actually going back. My parents' hometown, Kalamazoo, Michigan, has the Kalamazoo Marathon.
Okay.
Actually, the year I won the St. Jude Marathon, the guy who has won the Kalamazoo Marathon, Justin Gillette, multiple times, he's won that one a million times. But the reason I'm doing it is because I want to take Yogi up there. My grandparents, who are deceased, never got to see me marathon race, so I'm paying it in homage to them.
Nice.
Give it a go as a 43-year-old woman. After that, we are going to spend some time up at Lake Michigan that I mentioned earlier. We used to take our labs up to.
Okay.
Just let him spend some time up there. He probably won't go in much. It's freezing water, but but it's funny because the Kalamazoo Marathon has a 50 states challenge, and so every person who registers from each state, they're their 50 state person, and so I'm the person from Tennessee, so I'm representing Tennessee up there.
If you
go to their website, you can see I have my little, everybody else has their race pictures and all that stuff, and I have a picture of me in a scrub shirt, stethoscope, holding Yogi, and that's my picture. So it's coming true.
That's really cool. Well, then I might have to have you back on sometime after that and hear how that goes.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Very cool. Awesome.
All right.
I will put that on the list. Well, Angie, Dr. Z, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us again and giving me a whole bunch of really good information. This has been really fun.
Good, good. Well, let me know if you guys ever need anything else. Happy to answer. All right.
Well, thank you so much, and you have a good night.
You have a good night, too.
Bye-bye. To sum up what Dr. Zinkus and I talked about, stress is definitely something that occurs in our pups, but tends to be situational. So the good news is that typically when you remove your dog from the situation, their stress level lowers. The bad news is that we don't always know what the stress trigger is, but we can learn to look for signals that they are under stress. We talked a little bit about the signs, which include shaking, panting, excessive drooling, licking or chewing, loss of bladder control, restlessness, and destructive behaviors. But there's a couple more signs you can look for, which also include some very subtle body language. These include a tucked tail, pinned back or flattened ears, repetitive yawning, excessive shedding, and of course, physical contact, like when they shelter up against you or hide behind you. There may be more signs as well, so just pay attention to your dog's body language. You're going to know your dog the best. While the list of things that can stress your dog is long, and we covered a few, the ones that I think are most likely for adventuring dogs are going to be loud noises, deep vibrations like thunder or fireworks. And then there's, of course, traveling in a car and simply a change in their routine. As Dr. Z said, you can give things to lessen the effects of car travel stress, but in the end, the best solution is to start out slowly with positive reinforcement and build up till your pups become accustomed to being on the road for hours or even days at a time. Make sure they have their own safe spot in the car, like a kennel or bedding, preferably buckled in and restrained. Keep to their routines, such as bathroom breaks and feeding times, just like you would at home, to reduce the changes. All these things will help them become confident and more comfortable travelers over time. And one last very important thing to point out, as Dr. Zinkus mentioned, our dogs sense and react to our physical condition, including stress levels too. So staying calm and overcoming stressful moments together is always helpful. The goal, of course, is to get out and have a good time and be physically and mentally active, which, in my honest opinion, is the best solution for reducing stress. I definitely know it's Rue's favorite. I certainly hope y'all took something away from this, but if you feel like I missed anything important, let us know. Rue and I would love to know what stresses you out and how you deal with it. Drop us a message on Instagram at AdventureDogPodcast or email me at Nathan@AdventureDogPodcast.com. As always, thanks for listening. Now, go and have an adventure with your doggos.